the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Vayigash. We're getting close to the end of the year. That's tax time. We very much appreciate any donation that you can give to support the podcast. You can donate online anytime via pardes.org.il. You can also decide to sponsor a podcast. Contact Pardes for the details. You can donate now to sponsor podcasts anytime this coming year. Thank you very much. This week, Vayigash with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. Before I begin this podcast, I would like to thank Mark and Karen Revo, the parents of my dear student, Jess, for sponsoring this week's podcast. It has been my pleasure to have Jess in my Chumash class, and we have had numerous discussions of Torah, both in and outside of class. And I would like to say to Mark and Karen, or Mordechai and Miriam, that I truly look forward to being able to spend time with you the next time that you're in Jerusalem to study Torah together. So thank you. Today I would like to examine the reconciliation between Joseph and his brothers, between Joseph and Yehuda, the reconciliation that ultimately leads to the reunification of the family. Every time that I look at this story, I can't help but think of the lost opportunity when Jacob comes back and could have been reconciled to Esav, could have been reunited with him. But instead, that pivotal moment, that crucial meeting, results in a parting of ways. I would like to actually begin with our parsha and then maybe look back at the Yaakov and Esav story to perhaps get a better grasp of what is needed to create a reconciliation, a true reconciliation, as I said, that can bring about a reunification. So let me perhaps even begin with the end. In our parsha, when Joseph actually reveals himself to his brothers, it is clear that the brothers are taken aback. It's as if his revelation to them is coming completely out of nowhere. And it's as if Joseph already anticipates what is going through their mind. And so we have in chapter 45, verse 5, after Joseph says to them, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold to Egypt," he immediately says to them, "Do not be sad, do not be angry, because God has sent me before you to provide life." And once again in verse 7 he says, "God has sent me before you to provide some sort of remnant to help you overcome this difficult situation, the situation of the famine." And in the final statement in verse 8, he says, "And now, it is not you who sent me here, it is God." I would say that a critical element of Joseph's ability to be reconciled to his brothers, to those brothers who wanted to kill him, who threw him into a pit, who eventually sold him, and as we even hear at one point, who perhaps even saw his agony, saw him pleading for his life and just laughed at him. What gives Joseph the ability to be so magnanimous, to be so forgiving? One obvious explanation is that he's now in a position of power. He's in a position of strength. He can afford to be magnanimous. The tables are actually turned. They're in his hands right now. He can be generous. From the psukim that I read to you, it seems that there's a very, very different reason for that. It's not just because it all turned out well anyway. Because clearly there we know of many instances where people who, when the tables are turned, immediately want to take revenge and somehow see that justice is done. For Joseph, a big part of his being so magnanimous is his realization that he has been on a journey leading up to a mission which has been ordained by God. When Joseph said, "God has now sent me before you," It's as if Joseph right now is explaining to the brothers those dreams that he had 22 years earlier, where the brother said, "Do you think you will rule over us?" One might even say, "Do you think you will enslave us?" This was what aroused the ire of his brothers, the feeling that here is this one brother who is looking to be a ruler. And what Joseph says to them is, it's not about power. It's about a mission. Of course, he is the one who's now in a position where he has the power. And he even says that to his brothers. "I go tell my father about my position. I am a father to Pharaoh. I am a master in his house. I rule over the land of Egypt." Joseph has no delusions whatsoever about the position that he's in. But the important switch which has occurred is that it's not about power. It's not about ruling. It's about a mission, a shlichut. I have been given a mission by God. It's a mission which is not for the purpose of destroying, but for the purpose of giving life. I have been put in this position in order to be able to save our family. It is that awareness of God which shapes his worldview and which he wishes to communicate to his brothers. It is that worldview which he wishes to use to allay the fear of his brothers. There is a very interesting mitzvah in the Torah, and this is Parshat Kedoshim, chapter 19 in Leviticus, where the Torah says, "Do not take revenge, do not bear a grudge." And the classic example is given. If I go to someone to ask to borrow something, they refuse, and the next day they come back to me, don't act in a similar manner. Don't say, "Well, I won't give it to you because you didn't give it to me." Now, what's very interesting is, on a certain level, we could call that justice. You behaved in a certain manner, so now, let's play it back on you. And yet the Torah says, don't do that. Now, I would say that the most fundamental explanation is because ultimately the Torah wants us to act with compassion, not only with justice. But beyond that, the Torah is ultimately interested in having us live in harmony. Maimonides actually says that if people act with revenge, that creates a vicious cycle. And what ends up happening is it ultimately just leads to destruction. But the path of the Torah is reconciliation, harmony. But one of the medieval rabbis, the Sefer HaChinuch, gives a very interesting explanation where he says the reason not to take revenge is because ultimately what that person did to you was not about that person. Ultimately, God wanted it to happen. And so therefore, just accept what happened to you as being the will of God and see that person as simply having been an agent of that. And I would not be surprised that the Sefer HaChinuch got this idea from our section with Joseph's way of looking at the world. Yes, it's true, I was sold into Egypt, but ultimately that was part of a divine plan. Ultimately, I needed to come here. Ultimately, right, through a whole bunch of metamorphoses, this led to my becoming this powerful figure in Egypt. But that was ultimately for the purpose of saving you during a period of famine, so that it's Joseph's understanding of God and of how what happens to people is purposeful, which perhaps enables him to be so magnanimous to his brothers. But there is also another element to it, and that might be also something which Joseph himself orchestrates. We all know that Joseph never contacted his family upon coming to Egypt. And it's always surprising to me, especially the moment he comes to power, becomes the second to Pharaoh. Why not let your family know that you're alive and well? And it seems that Joseph does not want to let them know until he feels the moment is right. And what is that right moment? Well, it seems that Joseph is in certain ways playing like God. When he first encounters his brothers, he does not let on who he is. In fact, he's actually very harsh to them and continues to be harsh to them. He accuses them initially of being spies. He eventually plants the money which they brought to pay him for their food in their own sacks. which causes them a tremendous amount of angst. Eventually, based on his demand that they cannot come back unless they bring their younger brother Benjamin, he once again pulls a fast one on them by not only giving them back the money which they had brought and given to him, but by planting his special cup in Benjamin's sack and then accusing them of theft, of betrayal. Why is Joseph going through all of these theatrics? What's the point of it? Some people might make the argument that perhaps this is the way he's getting his revenge against his brothers, putting them in a position of seeing what it's like to be victimized, what it's like to be vulnerable, having them go through his experience. I can't argue against that. I could certainly see someone making such a case, but obviously in my opening words, I tried to be more generous to Joseph. But what I will say is that in the course of this charade, Joseph is able to learn something, to see something about his brothers. And I want to focus on two comments from the previous parsha and then look at our parsha. When Joseph initially accuses the brothers of being spies, it says that one brother says to the other, "We are guilty for what we did to our brother. We saw his anguish, and we didn't hear it. Therefore, this calamity is coming upon us." Joseph sees how the brothers have changed over the years. The remorse which they feel for what they did to him. Not only the remorse, but they too, based on their theology, their understanding of God, see what is happening to them as paying the price for what they did to their brothers. And in a certain sense, are accepting it as what perhaps should be happening to them. In the aftermath of the Benjamin story, when Joseph plants his cup and then sends his servant after the brothers, and they discover that Joseph's special cup is in Benjamin's sack, they're brought back to Joseph in the last week's parsha, and Joseph asks them, "How could you do such a thing?" And Yehuda's response is that God has found the sin of your servants. Let us all now be servants to you. What sin is Yehuda talking about? Clearly, Yehuda is thinking back to that decision to sell Joseph. Perhaps also to the cruelty which they displayed when it seems Joseph was perhaps pleading with them and they just let him be taken away. And what is Yehuda saying? Not only have we sinned, but God is now making us pay for that sin. And what is the payment? Measure for measure. We sold our brother to be a slave. Let us be slaves. So that the brothers have come to a point of acknowledgement of what they did wrong and of their preparedness to take responsibility for it. Which brings us to this parsha. When Joseph says to Judah, "No, I only want that boy who stole my cup, Benjamin. Let the other brothers, all of you, go home." And this is the beginning of our parsha. Judah comes near to Joseph. And as Rashi notes, he comes near. Coming near can be for reconciliation. Coming near can be for battle. The same expression is used when Yaakov met Esav in that historic moment of potential reconciliation. And when we read the beginning of our parsha, we see how Yehuda plays on the emotions of this Egyptian lord, at least who he thinks is an Egyptian lord. And he tries to arouse with him that sense of mercy, pity on Jacob, who will be completely devastated if Benjamin is taken away from him, if Benjamin does not come back. But there's another side to the coin, and that is that Judah shows Joseph that he is resolute. Under no circumstances will Judah allow that to happen. As we know in last week's parsha, Judah guaranteed the return of Benjamin. And Judah says, "I will not allow you to take him. Take me instead." Judah is prepared to now make what we could call a historic rectification of what he did 22 years earlier to Joseph. In that story, he was the one who suggested to sell Joseph, to rid them of this son of Rachel, who perhaps would rule over them. In this story, Yehuda's prepared to put everything on the line to save this other son of Rachel. And of course, it's true that this son is totally innocent. Judah knows that. But nevertheless, he will not allow him to be taken as a slave. And I would perhaps say one other thing. After the brothers sold Joseph, all of them see the tremendous pain which this caused their father, how their father stopped functioning. Judah's response was, to in a certain sense, take responsibility, but not take responsibility. His response, which is in chapter 38, is to essentially leave the home, to go down, as Rashi says, to go down from his greatness, to in a certain sense have a self-imposed exile. But in a certain way, it was also a cop-out, because that way he doesn't have to see that pain and suffering of his father. That same Judah says very clearly in our parsha, I cannot see that suffering of my father. I will not allow it to happen. Under no circumstances will I allow you to take Benjamin. So there's a second reason why Joseph is ready to reveal himself to his brothers and be so magnanimous. Because Joseph sees how important the family is to his brothers. The remorse on the one hand for what they did to Joseph, and the willingness, the preparedness to not allow that to happen a second time to Benjamin, and perhaps even more importantly, to not bring about any more pain and suffering to their father. So that, if I could sum up what I've just been saying over the past 20 minutes, what enables this reconciliation to happen is because both Joseph and his brothers have undergone a certain transformation. Each one in their own way has come to a certain position of strength, which allows them to now come back together. And when they will come back together, even if Joseph is still in a quote-unquote superior position because of his office as the second to Pharaoh, they're coming together as a family, as brothers. If I now go back to the story of Yaakov and Esav, I believe that, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, that Esav has undergone a certain transformation. And that might be for two reasons. Number one, he has become a successful individual on his own right. I even say more than that, he's become a very powerful individual on his own right. And number two, I think his profound respect, and I'd even say love, for his father perhaps has him resigned to what he knows his father did consciously, which is that even after he finds out that it was Jacob who took the blessing, he affirms the blessing to Jacob, which means that ultimately Esav accepts that Jacob should have the blessing because perhaps he does not find it threatening anymore, and number two, because of the deep respect he has for his father. But what doesn't allow the reconciliation is that Jacob has not made that transformation from Jacob to Israel. Jacob does not yet feel that strength of personality, of identity, to be able to confront Esav, brother to brother, and as a result of that, to embrace him, to feel that he can now look at him, as the expression is in Hebrew, begova einayim, eye to eye, and not be afraid, not be intimidated, but on the contrary, to actually work with him. But he's not there yet. I would like to just end by saying that it may very well be that Jacob realizes his inability to relate to his brother and to be able to ultimately be reunited with his brother. Yet nevertheless, he was able to transmit that quality of Israel to his children. And even when we see a replay in the story of Joseph and his brothers, I would venture to say their ability to bring about that reconciliation is ultimately linked with Jacob Israel. As I mentioned earlier, The path of the Torah is always a path of reconciliation. And the path of reconciliation has to be rooted in a strong sense of self, and a firm belief in God, and in an ability to stand up, to take responsibility, to be prepared to pay whatever consequences need to be paid, with the realization that in the long term, this is the only path that we really can afford to take. Shabbat Shalom, and may we always be able to keep that vision of reconciliation and reunification.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to check out all of the electronic materials available on our learning site, elmad.pardes.org. Thanks very much, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.